This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Things You Can't Touch. This is a podcast where philosophy meets the real world. Join us as we touch on things you can't quite put your finger on but won't stop thinking about. And today, I'm very excited to introduce you to our new guest. You can see sitting in the corner. I'm going to allow him to introduce himself.
Yo, people, it's your boy NK, aka known as the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour. I appreciate being on the show, innit?
I liked it. You were so quick, so smooth with it. Yeah, of course. I'm so happy to have you. I think I want you to tell the people just a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so I have a podcast called The Rare Podcast, Rare. And it's basically a pop culture podcast. We talk about various different topics. So we can go from video games to film and television to music, just basically a podcast about various mediums of entertainment. Yeah. And yeah.
I love that. When I saw your content, I was like, because my whole thing, yeah, is about trying to get like the most random of people to do philosophy. So in my head, I was like, I need to start reaching out to people who I don't know what I'm going to say to you.
Yeah.
So that said, based on everything that you just like mentioned, I've got, I think, the perfect philosophical question for you.
For sure.
We can take it from whatever angle you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop now. The tension, you know, it has built up. It's enough. I'm going to ask you the question now. The question is...
Yeah.
How fictional is fiction?
Oh, that's a good one.
Do you know what I mean?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
Short answer. We'll get into a long answer, but short answer: not really. Not that fictional.
That's so interesting.
I think no art doesn't exist in a vacuum. Mm. Art is fiction is kind of a thing where life imitates art and art imitates life.
This is so good.
The conditions that you live in or the conditions that, you know, you've seen will subconsciously affect the work that you make.
Yeah.
And I feel like all artists, whether consciously and subconsciously, there'll be something of them that is tied to something socio-political, something geographical, that will
cultural,
that will find a way to manifest itself in this work. And that's why, for example, like when we, I'll use a prime example, when Black Panther came out, it wasn't just a movie about a guy who has a panther costume.
Yeah.
There's a reason why black communities took that movie.
Yeah.
And yes, Black Panther is a superhero, but representation matters.
Yeah.
And you take stories about, you know, the Holocaust, or you take stories, for example, like X-Men.
Yeah.
The dynamic between Professor X and Charles Xavier was heavily influenced or heavily reminds you of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And that's a story about genetically altered superpowered beings. The two worlds don't link, but there's always a link that happens in, you know, real society that reflects onto the work.
So between real life and fiction, there's always at least a bridge, if not like a string that tethers the two together.
For
basically.
Sure.
That's such an interesting answer. I really like that. I did not expect that from you. I thought you were going to be like, fiction is fiction, real life is real life.
Far from it.
That's so good. Okay.
So a bit of context about me. My background, I studied film and TV in uni.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the modules was just about textual analysis and about film like theory and stuff like that. So a lot of it is kind of unpacking like deeper messaging or And sometimes there's a term called death of the author, which means that sometimes the art can take a life outside of what the author intended it to be. So just like it doesn't necessarily mean, oh, because I'm a writer and I write something and I intended the story to have this certain message. But if the public now hear a totally different message, that message that the public hear, especially in mass, especially if it's a conclusion that a lot of people come to, is just as valid as my original interpretation.
Yeah.
So there's, when it comes to art, it's like, there are no rules, but then at the same time, it's interesting because there are no rules, but there are rules at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. We'll unpack what you just said in a second. Because I think what I wanted to even ask was, based on what you said, at what point do you consider, well, you've used the phrase, well, you've used the term art to describe like all forms of fiction.
I guess.
So I'm going to continue on that.
Yeah.
So at what point do you consider art to become fictional? Like if you imagine it as like a scale, at what point between 0 and 100, like is it halfway?
It depends. Like if you're telling, like I feel, it depends. I think fiction, something to be fictional means that it's not, for example, if you're telling a story directly about World War II and you mention, you know, you recount specific events, that's when you're telling a non-fictional story, you're recounting events.
Okay.
But at the same time, you can make a story about World War II. For example, there's a movie, Inglourious Basterds, directed by Quentin Tarantino. And in that movie, like, it's very much set in Nazi Germany. It's very much set in World War II. By the end of the story, Hitler dies in a movie theater. That's obviously not what happened.
True, yeah.
So that's fiction. So I think fiction is when you, I think something becomes fiction when you bend reality to a point where, you have to bend reality a lot. Like it has to distinguish itself from just a retelling of like current events, because that's what makes a movie different from a history book.
Okay. I think I can really hold space with what you're saying. But for me, it's not that I disagree with you. I think I really like what you're saying. The way I think about it in my head is like, even if it is a non-fiction X, Y, or Z, it's not real. Like it, like, How do I explain it? Even like for me, history, like the concept of history to me, it feels like fiction. Although you said that that is what happened, I'm reading this through a medium. And for me, whenever there's a medium, that that immediately creates a barrier, that immediately creates a concept of unreality. Does that make sense?
I get it. I think with history, like let's say we're watching a historical read, like you're reading like, I don't know, a biography or something.
Yeah.
I always say history, there's a quote, history is always determined by the victor. Yeah. And history is just a matter of perspective. Thanks. Now, if there are not, the reason why I think some things can be history, if let's say, I don't know, I drop a coin here and there are 10,000 people that see me drop a coin and everyone has the same story of Noah flipped a coin and dropped
and
it.
Yeah.
That's like an accurate retelling of history. You're still retelling it and there's still a bit of like separation because the person who's outside this room hasn't seen it. But there's enough reliable sources for people to say, oh, that actually happened.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I think, okay, I'm going to hold on to that. I keep saying I'm holding on, but I promise I will come back.
No worries.
A lot of it will be unpacked as we go.
Yeah.
What I was going to say was, I wanted to bring up social media really quickly.
Yes.
And the thing about social media is that I believe it was intended to reflect reality or at least be like a diary for people to let you, like, this is what's going on in my life. This is what I'm doing. Keep up with me or come with me as I, you know, go get my coffee or whatever. Some of them were intended to be dating apps, which I think even that is intended for reality, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now I want to just ask, what's the difference between social media and TV? Because it feels like a lot, like TV as in, in fact, all types of TV, because it feels like a lot of social media is scripted, like a lot goes into content.
Absolutely.
You script it, the lighting, the, can you say that line again, etc. Like nothing feels real anymore.
I think the difference, I say barrier accessibility and barrier of entry.
Nice.
I feel like with television, right, in order to be on a TV show, you have to audition. There are so many barriers of entry to even get the platform. Yeah. And then the platform itself is just like hyper curated.
Yeah.
Where with social media, people are blowing up and gaining mass followings for going on their phone, videoing themselves in a bonnet and rambling about anything.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's weird because social media, when people say social media isn't real, I push back on that.
Oh my gosh, go on. Yeah.
Because it's real to it's real in the sense where people are going on social media and now some people's livelihood is now dependent on social media.
Mm-hmm. So it's real for those
people. So it's real for those people.
Okay.
But also it's real in the sense that it's real in the sense that people have made tangible connections from it.
Mm-hmm. Like and us being here right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People have made tangible connections from it. So it's like, I don't want to say social media, I don't like when people say social media is not real. I will also say, in like anything, use it in moderation. Okay. I think it's more of a thing of discernment. Okay. Every opinion, because social media presents every opinion to you. Like, for example, you could walk past somebody and be like, oh my God, that person has an ugly shoe.
Yeah.
And that thought stays in your mind. It doesn't go anywhere. It stays in your mind. But social media, positively and negatively, has allowed every single thought that people have to be immediately vocalized and distributed to the masses.
Yeah.
So that thought that you may have, oh my God, I look bummy today.
Yeah.
Now that thought is now amplified by people saying,
yeah, you do.
Yeah, you did look bummy today. Yeah. Instead of, hey, you walk past an auntie in the road and she goes,
That's it.
Like, you know what that means, but you can kind of.
Yeah, but it's not in your face.
Exactly.
And a lot of. And I think what you said is actually is so true. There's a lot of opinions on social media that you otherwise would not have been exposed to.
And it was funny. It's funny. And it's like, it's a level of exposure that us as human beings haven't been conditioned to hadn't been conditioned to accept. Because you deep it. Flashback, like, let's say 500 years ago, right? There was a TikTok I saw which was funny. Like, the prettiest girl you saw in the world was probably your next door neighbor or somebody who lived in your community.
Yeah. Now you can see someone 6 hours away.
You can see somebody. I put it this way. There is a level of globalization to the point where I know what Brazilian kids in the favela are listening to.
Crazy.
There's a level of exposure, and that's not through like a multi-million dollar conglomerate record label pushing those songs.
Yeah.
That's through me just scrolling through an app.
Like, you just swipe once.
And it's information overload.
Wow.
I feel like we are digesting information that our species has never digested before.
It's too much. Yeah. And we're not even used to it. Yeah.
Why do Americans know about Jet 2 Holiday?
I don't know. That is so real. I don't know.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a level of like, it's a device that has completely changed the world, and we're not gonna understand how it's affected socialization until research and studies have been done because it's an ever evolving thing.
Yeah.
Because you deep, right? I'm assuming you're in your 20s, right?
Yeah, I am.
So cool. People went from BlackBerry Messenger.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Skype and all of them things there, MSN and whatever.
Yes.
Now we've got TikTok Lives.
It's so quick. Like, where I could jump.
We could go on TikTok Live right now and communicate with an American stranger.
I was on live the other day. The Nigerians were in my live.
For sure.
I was so shocked.
During the pandemic, right? I was on Clubhouse.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that chaotic app. I was there for a minute. But bearing in mind, from that app, I've made like genuine friends today.
Is it?
Genuine,
I
like.
I know people who've met on Twitter.
Yeah.
And now they're best friends.
So, and it's a weird thing. So that's why it's like, when we say social media isn't real, it depends.
Yeah.
Because some people have found the most meaningful connections through algorithms.
Yeah.
And even this, I've always wondered this, why is it on your, we all have TikTok. Why is it on your TikTok that the algorithm is so sophisticated that it shows me black people?
You know, that's so true. That is so true.
Because we're not put, none of us are putting hashtag black UK.
Yeah.
But the algorithm is so sophisticated that it understands that, hey, this person and that person,
yeah,
you're in the UK, okay, you're probably African, yeah, right? That's why you're sending me the Abo Jedi song, Cascade song.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we're going to send you people like this.
Yeah, do that, yeah.
And then from, yeah, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, what's that thing that started happening? TikTok is saying people you may know.
Yeah.
Whoa, I brushed and past somebody on the tube and now you're suggesting
do you know what I'm saying?
To follow on TikTok?
Like, do you know what I'm saying? And it's like, there's two things. There's a way you should be like paranoid and concerned because obviously, yeah, like, information, data breaches, right? Yeah, tell, like, yeah, you know, there's just data is just out there,
yeah,
on these platforms, and we low key sign up for it, but high key sign up for,
yeah,
it. But
we very much like we consented to that. Yeah,
sign,
yeah,
up for it, but it's also a thing of like, yeah, like socialization. The way people socialize is going to change.
Yeah,
forever.
That's the truth. That is so crazy. Like, I didn't even think a conversation about social media being fictional can turn into all of that, but
yeah,
it's so real. In my head, I'm very like categorical, so there has to be one thing here and one thing there, but since the start of this episode you've been saying that, yeah, like they're inextricable, like they, yeah, are linked,
yeah,
whether we like it or not.
I think things are dealt in various shades of gray, like there's, okay, in a lot of shades of gray, like there's, it's, some things are black and white in life, and I feel like it's good to have like black and white stances, yeah, 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 but some things are just complicated as hell, and yeah, it's like
something like this, at what point does reality turn into fiction? And in my head I'm still grabbing at the concept that surely fiction is here and the real world is here,
because for example, right, you, yeah, we're content creators, we're producing content right now, mm-hmm, right, and
yeah,
you're producing content for people to consume and people, yeah, to have a connection to.
Yes.
At what point is that connection that an audience member has with you valid or not? Because they might think, you might say something on this podcast that's personal and they might think, oh my god, I know you, like you shared something, but
oh my
they
gosh,
don't,
yeah. That makes me think of like influencers and stuff,
exactly,
like people like Nella Rose. Literally, I love Nella, I actually really love her, but it's like, she, when she started creating content, mind you, this was in an age where content wasn't really content. Like no one woke up and said, oh, I'm going to create content today. Mm. She just loved the art.
Yeah.
She loved what she did. She set up her camera. She said, yeah, let's post on the internet. It went crazy, yeah, and she was happy. And the next thing you know, she is the moral standard, quote unquote. She never signed up for that.
Yeah. And that's why there's a stark difference between influencers and celebrities, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Influencers are meant to be aspirational and quote unquote relatable.
Yeah.
Influencers are kind of a level of success and fame that is supposed to be marketed as attainable for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, oh, so good, yeah.
It's supposed to be marketed as attainable. It's like, this person is you with a little bit of hard work.
Yeah.
Rather than a celebrity.
I love the way you phrase that. Sorry, continue.
But a celebrity and like the stars of the past are essentially deified, essentially like idols, like, yeah, pillars of, oh my god, I can never reach,
yeah,
this, thank,
yeah,
you for giving me what you've,
yeah,
given me.
So like the way they treat like Beyonce,
exactly,
and even like K-pop fans as well, you know, that someone made a video, his name is Marcel, he was like, mm-hmm, why people in the UK are not really celebrities, and he likened it to like Beyonce has this entire hive, like people basically, like I don't want to use like an extreme word, but they worship these, yeah, celebrities. And it's just like, well, the whole point of Marcel's video was to say that we don't have that in the UK, or we,
yeah,
haven't had as many of those in the UK.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I feel like with influencers it's like that thing, and it's,
mm-hmm,
it's, you're far enough to where I can admire you, but close enough to where I feel I can touch you.
Yeah,
that's where influencers like lie.
Familiarity,
exactly. There's and their content is very much still built on familiarity.
Yeah,
like that's why they will touch it. You'll never see Beyonce do, hey guys, this is where I went today.
Yeah,
like
that's the truth.
You see her when you see her.
But that's interesting because someone like Central C, for example, yeah, I think Central C started the trend of rappers now doing vlogs.
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't, guys, I'm sorry, I don't know. He's the first person that I saw, so I'm sorry. So what I'm trying to say is Central C in the like UK wide should be considered a celebrity, not an influencer. Mm-hmm. And now what you see is celebrities or wannabe celebrities, I guess. I don't know if that was rude, but almost celebrities almost celebrities doing influencer things. Why?
Because I think relatability is super profitable.
Okay, wow.
If relatability is profitable, yeah, and these corporations are very smart to what's going on.
Because even the promo that big organizations have started doing recently is very much like just doing a TikTok trend.
Like, yeah. One, it's there's two ways to look about it. Profitability is cheaper to pay you than Beyonce.
Wow.
Just like cold hard numbers, but also too, it's like if I show you someone that you believe you're not too far away from doing something, it convinces you that
I'm gonna buy that product too,
exactly, because they got it.
But if I saw Beyonce with a product, I'll be thinking, let me just leave it
exactly.
For the Beyonce's.
Yeah. And I feel like relatability is like, and that's why, for example, you see the whole press junket scene when it comes to like movies and television has changed. You see people doing hot ones.
Yeah.
See people doing things like these chicken chop date shows.
Yeah.
Like you see people doing stuff that makes them, oh my God, you're human.
Yeah.
And I feel like now in terms of like the way we look at our public figures now, there's not many that reach that deity status.
Yeah.
But a lot of them want to be humanized. There's a reason why people go on Kai Sanat streams. There's a reason people want to be seen as
so
relatable. Relatability is the new currency.
Wow. I have nothing to say. Like, everything that you're saying is just like, where did you even get this from? But that's so good. Yeah. I want to just turn the conversation slightly, but I don't want to act like I didn't just take in what you just said. I want everyone to go back and play that one more time. Because relatability is the new currency and it's happening right in front of us. Anyway, I want to talk about Plato. I'm going to talk about Plato now. And Plato has such an interesting take on fiction.
Okay.
He actually warned us against poetry and theatre, which was obviously their TV at that time,
mm-hmm.
because he rebukes the idea of unreality and the imitations of truth. He actually believed, just for context, that this world is not real. He said that this world is fake. There is the real world exists in somewhere called the world of the forms. Okay. So this world is just a copy of the world of the forms. And the reason why he hated poetry and theatre was because they became a copy of the real world.
Mm.
And he thought, in order to be perfect, you can't be a copy, you have to be the original. So I think I just want to ask your thoughts on what Plato has to say about fiction, and also, how real can something be if it's just a copy of reality?
I think, so I'll answer the second part, because I think that part's interesting. I think all things, I don't think originality exists anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun these days.
Originality in its purest form, something out of nothing, doesn't exist, but you can make something from something.
Oh my gosh, this is so,
so like, yeah. I feel like, for example, like, if like, I remember like there's different recipes to dessert, right?
Mm.
And I remember there was a dessert, I can't remember what country it was from. Mm. It was basically, it started because the guy flopped how to make apple crumble.
That's so funny.
The guy flopped how to make apple crumble and it made a new national dish because of that failure.
Wow.
And you can start replicating something and create something else. Like you look at even like the evolution of music, a lot of genres evolve from R&B, from gospel to R&B, back into R&B. Do you know what I'm saying? You just look at
Afro swing, Afro fusion. Exactly. Just basically different.
You look
fronts.
At rock and roll, blues to there are so many things that are even what's his name? I can't remember. The one of the drummers from David Grohl. He's he was a drummer for I think Nirvana, and he's lead singer of the Foo Fighters.
Nice.
He said basically the drum patterns he used were taken from black disco.
Okay.
But when you hear the two genres, you don't hear that.
There's nothing.
But there's always a connect. So for me, the concept of originality comes from the altering of something else.
Wow.
That's where
Originality is never actually original, or our understanding of originality is too perfect. It's too far removed. Yeah, I think like that's not what originality is.
Our understanding of originality is literally when God said, "Let there be light," and
Light. And then you just create something new.
Out of nothing.
Yeah,
where
but that's
it's,
not. Yeah,
it's not the case where if you like a lot of innovation comes from the groundwork of something else. Yeah. Like
very cool.
Yeah, that's what I think originality is. And I think, and what was the first part? Sorry, about what Plato said.
I was just asking. Is this how real can something be if it's just a copy of reality?
There was something you asked before about like plays and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, what do you think about him warning people not to engage with theatre and poetry?
I fundamentally disagree.
That's so good.
I fundamentally disagree. I think it's one. I think stories have been a part of humanity for decades.
Yeah.
For since the beginning of time, and stories are parables, are entertainment, are many things like that. Like they are part of the human condition that you can't escape. Me telling you how my day was is a story. Is the simplest part of a story.
That is so
because
true.
It doesn't inform you about
the political and economic state of the world.
It doesn't sometimes, but it can though.
Yeah.
Because me telling you, hey, I went to Greg's and why a sausage rolls £3. I'm just example.
Yeah. Not Thursday.
In isolation, that's just me ranting about Greg's. But then from that story, you've learned
inflation's
happened.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of storytelling.
Wow. Oh my gosh. You know what that gives me?
Yeah.
The next philosopher that I was literally going to bring up, which is Aristotle.
Mm.
Plato taught Aristotle, but Aristotle basically disagreed with everything that Plato taught him, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
But Aristotle was basically like, fiction, especially tragedy, which is something we're going to get onto. I find it so interesting. Actually reveals a deeper truth about the human condition. And I think that one is it's so much the opposite of what Plato is saying, but I think I resonate with that more.
Yeah.
Watching fiction, watching cartoons, watching shows, even video games, is like, this shows me more about reality than reality does. And the reason why I think that is because sometimes I think we sugarcoat and we pretend that things are not happening in the real world, but fiction uses it uses techniques and euphemisms to basically show that this is actually what's happening right now.
And also you're too close to the picture to get the full image.
So good.
And we are all wrapped up with our own problems in life, right? Listen, bills got to be paid, whatever problems we have in our own life.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can see an allegory, if we can see an avatar that is quite frankly disconnected to us but is a representation of us
and
we can see things through that perspective.
Yeah,
we can see things through. Listen, none of us have ever been on a sinking boat and lost a lover, but people love Titanic because it's that feeling of Titanic for a lot of people taps into that feeling of long lost love. Now it goes in a completely different direction that most of us will never see, and that's the exciting part of it.
Yeah.
But I think every good story taps into a core human feeling that we feel and then takes it, times it by 100.
You're making me so excited. I need to stop. This is so good. And it's like, you're basically anticipating everything that I'm going to say next, because Aristotle talks about this thing called catharsis.
Yes.
Do you know what catharsis is? I'll allow you to speak more about it. But catharsis is basically this feeling where you intentionally put yourself in a position where you feel extremely sad or extremely frightened, but you do that in a controlled environment, which is why he advocated for and spoke so much about tragedy in that time. That was like the most extreme emotion that they had. And I think what I wanted to say is like, why do people do that? Like, you will buy a ticket to go and watch a horror movie and you know you're going to be scared. You know that it's going to give you nightmares. You'll buy a ticket and go and watch, as you said, the Titanic or similar shows that is going to make you cry. Why do people do that?
I think it's the ability, I feel like for different reasons, it's the ability to see that their feelings can be seen and can be expressed. I feel like seeing it on a big screen and it's like, damn, like that's so real, man. That I felt that because it's like sometimes with our own emotions, right? It's a lot to deal with, and navigating our own emotions has been a debate throughout the beginning of time. So if we can see again, it's all about kind of, it's weird because it's distant and it's fake, right? We can fully enjoy and immerse ourselves there because we know there's no consequence to us.
Yeah.
Right? If I was to say, take my suffering, you're not taking it.
I'm sorry.
You're not taking it. But if I was to be like, hey.
Oh, could you just watch this?
Let's watch this. Let's suffer. Let's watch. Hey, oh man, I feel sad for him.
I just feel like crying today.
Watch. And it's an outlet of just release that isn't our own. And it's a very interesting thing about humans because we love it because we even in our own lives, right? If I say, if we're at a party and I say fight and I say, oh my God, them guys are fighting. Somebody's going to ask how.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to ask why.
Yeah.
People are going to look. People are going to stare.
Yeah.
Because people, nobody has gone out and says, I want to see a fight.
Yeah.
But we're all intrigued by madness. Yeah. We're all intrigued by something other. Yeah. And I feel like all stories, fiction is just an extension of our base curiosity.
Do you think that this is like what human nature is?
Yes.
Wow.
Because Because what? Okay. There are stories that have been passed down, right, for years. Why do we know that Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall?
Why? And he had a great fall. I don't know.
We don't. It has no educational value to me.
Not much, yeah. No.
But it's the first stories that we remember.
Yeah.
It's one of and it's one of these things like we just, humanity likes to pass down stories for various different reasons, right? The Boy Who Cried Wolf is a story about, hey, lying and fiction, like, if you keep on lying, nobody believe you. And sometimes these stories have parables and wider messaging, right? But I think at the end of the day, people just want to share experiences.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes communicating those experiences, I can't, for example, like we've just met today, I can't come and tell you, damn, I'm like, oh, like I've gone through this, that today. But if we watch an episode of, I don't know, Grey's Anatomy, and a character's going through divorce, and I'm like, damn, heartbreak's tough.
Yeah.
And then we can have a whole conversation about heartbreak because of that stimulus.
Yeah.
Instead of me, and it doesn't require me to unpack anything of my own.
Yeah.
And I feel like art does that. It's a mirror.
Yeah.
It's a mirror to us.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. I like that. But on the other hand, what I think, I don't know, this is more of an ethical turn.
Yes.
Which is, Aristotle argues, and I think I agree with him. It forms part of my ethical theory that I'll be writing soon. Because I'm a philosopher. Yeah, I'm a philosopher. Yeah, I'll send you the book. he basically said that catharsis is a process of purification and purging and balancing of the soul. And I very much agree because I personally believe that human beings have to experience different types of emotions to, you know, like, I don't want to sound medieval, but to be balanced and to be a good person and to be like, okay. So the way that plays out in my life, for example, is I will intentionally take myself to places that I don't want to go because I feel like I've been chilling for too long. I need to step out of my comfort zone and see what it feels like to feel that in order to really enjoy this. So I like putting myself at extremes so that I know what my calm feels like, if that makes sense. So that's his take and also my take on why people experience catharsis, because nobody obviously wants to lose a loved one. So let's go and do that in a controlled environment where it feels like I've built this relationship with this character and now that character has died. Yeah. Oh, where is me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what academic writer said this, but sometimes you like, and this is a theory, so it's not something I 100% agree with, but sometimes they say like, you're talking about cinema specifically, but I'll say this with like fiction in general, sometimes you need to like write stuff to kind of, his words like exercise the demons in your mind.
That is so good.
exercise demons in your mind. Yeah. But he's like, basically like sometimes like there's stuff that's buried within the subconscious that if you were to act on it physically, it's foul. You can't do that.
Yeah.
But if you write,
talk about that.
If you, for example, I can't go and rob a bank today. But I'm going to watch a heist movie about robbing a bank, and I'm going to get that that little dopamine spike. I'm like, ooh.
I hope they escape. Yeah, oh my gosh, what's happening? Whoa,
But do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's and that's a level of like, that's where fiction can exist as well. That little, okay, that other reality where these things do exist. And me, for example, I play a lot of video games. I've played, you know, I'll use Call of Duty, for example. If I was to enact some of the things I've done in Call of Duty, they'll try me in the Crown Court.
Yeah.
But Call of Duty, it's all good.
Because it's happening in this controlled environment, this controlled space.
It's a control, do you know what I'm saying? And
now that you brought that up, I'm going to quickly skip to something else that I was going to say later, but I think I'm just going to say it now, which is, bear with me as I find him. It's basically about how, like, I want us to talk about how fiction impacts real life. Obviously, what you said is a conversation that people always say, which is, oh, if they play violent games, then they're going to be violent, which is a conversation in and of itself. But I think it's more so things like, you know, Peter Pan.
Okay.
After Peter Pan, there was like a rise in children trying to fly. Did you know that? That's what was happening.
Yeah.
And then another example that I had was, you know, they had to take out a scene in Lilo and Stitch. Because I think she put her sibling
in the dryer.
And like children were copying that. That's another example. And it's just like, I don't know why. And I don't know if this is what you used to do, but me, when I was growing up, I had two siblings, and then I got older and then I had two more. But so me and my two siblings, when we were basically the same age and we were all kids, whenever we will see a TV show, we'll be like, oh, that character's me, that one is you, and that one is you. Like, why?
Because imagination is one of the most powerful things we have. And I feel like, obviously, as we get older, we get confronted with reality.
Yeah.
But everyone imagines things because, I'll put imagination in the simplest form. You wanted to start a podcast. That wasn't real.
It wasn't. You're right. It was just the concept.
It wasn't real.
It was just a thought.
Now, obviously, there are some things, you know, that's why in life you learn things, you know, you learn the laws of physics and you learn, hey, okay, I can't fly.
Yeah.
But I feel like with children, especially, right, I think it's important to let them, like, imagine things and play.
Yeah.
Within, obviously, you put guidelines and restrictions. The same way we go to the cinema, right? Like, I want to watch a heist movie because I want to see people rob banks. I am not going to take that and rob a bank.
I
feel like I feel like imagination is something that as we get older, you have less access to just due to life. And I feel like it's very important to, tell your kid not to jump off the balcony.
Please don't.
But if he wants to wear a cape and run around like Superman,
go ahead.
Let them have that sense of wonder and joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like going back to the conversation about influences, right? The children are being influenced to fly. We're being influenced to buy a Gucci bag.
Wow. Crazy.
one is based on physical tangibility, but another is based on just, hey, children's favorite word is why. They want to understand the makeup of the world. They want to understand why things are. We've never lost that sense of wonder or aspiration. We've just put it in a different area.
That's true.
We've just taken that. There's a reason why motivation content bangs.
Yeah.
There's a reason why people watch finance TikTok.
Yeah.
That level of aspiration and imagination is still there based on, like, there are people who, and this isn't me being a dream killer because I have big dreams too, but there are people who believe they will wake up a millionaire.
Yeah.
based on do you know, based on
seeing the content that's out there,
just based
know,
on but
fueling their dreams
exactly based on what they see.
Yeah.
And there is a sense of wonder. And now in life, there are, as we say, we learn things that can probably get us to that point faster. Mm-hmm. We have way more information and context than a 5-year-old. That's why our imaginations are different.
Yeah.
But that dream of I will have a mansion isn't based on anything tangible to your current situation. It's based on wonder, the same wonder the kid has to fly.
That's true. But the only thing that I want to just point out is something else that I wanted to bring up, which I think makes sense here. Because on the flip side, fiction becomes real for adults as well.
For sure.
So what I want to bring up is recently people have been, like, a lot of like artists have been asking people to animate them. So turn them into an animation or a cartoon. That's one thing. The second thing is conventions. People actually spend entire days, entire weeks actually planning their outfit to cosplay. For example, actual like things that are not real, but you love this thing so much that you're bringing it to life.
Absolutely.
And you want to be it. And I think another thing is people genuinely fall in love with characters. Like I'm not really a victim of that necessarily, but there are characters that's just like, oh my gosh, like if that person was real, like, whoa, like, yes, basically. Yeah. And some, I think there's a guy in Japan who actually married an anime character. Like that's how far it goes. Yeah. So that said, it's just like, yeah, at what point does fiction remain fiction? At what point should fiction remain fiction? And what you were saying with the children, for example, which is allow their minds to run free, does that also apply here?
It's tricky because, like, there are rules, but who makes the rules? But that's a different question. But it's a thing, for example, cosplaying, right?
Yeah.
Cosplaying, I love, I don't cosplay myself.
Yeah, but like, you love it. Yeah, same, I love watching it.
I love cosplaying, and partly because, you know, like, you know, I'm an anime fan, so those half of these people are my peoples, innit?
Fairs.
But I think cosplaying, one, it's more sort of like an appreciation, like, for the medium, and appreciation for, like, oh my God, this medium resonated with me. Because at the end of the day, like, a lot of these shows have themes that will resonate with people. Mm. Like, one of my favorite shows, Naruto, anime Naruto, is like about ending the cycle.
I don't think I'm ever going to watch that.
It's too many episodes, but like, my firm belief is I can convert anyone into an anime fan. I just need to know what you like. But anyways. Okay,
don't worry. I already watch anime, but I'm just not really too, I'm just not there. I watch like Hunter x Hunter type. You know, it's not too long, not too short.
You know, Hunter x Hunter heavily inspired Naruto.
Is it?
Heavily, like, yeah, but that's a different question. But yeah, I was saying basically that, yeah, you can have an appreciation for them. Yeah, Naruto, that's what I brought up. It's very much about ending the cycle of hatred, right?
Yeah.
And there are certain characters that represent certain motifs and certain things. And praising the character might be praising what they represent.
Mm,
and what they represent can harken back to things that relate to you certain stances that you have.
Yeah.
Where I believe it goes to a point of unreality is where, like, yeah, you are marrying a digitized character.
Yeah, like,
or you are forming like, for example, because you could form a relationship with someone based off the initial premise that, oh my God, we love the same show.
Yeah.
You can have that initial conversation and that can bring you two together. And that show has given you something emotionally palatable.
Yeah.
But obviously then it's your two's turn to take that, and goes back to the original point I made about, like, there's nothing original, but you can expand upon things, and you've taken something and you've now made it your own. But to go back, like, a drawing, there's a line to where, like, okay, reality has to hit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, at the end of the day, I realize, okay, I can feel emotional about this piece of work. I can feel, you know, attached to these characters.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if I break it down, it is a drawing on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And you have to be able, I think where it gets to unreality is you're not able to discern between the two.
Yeah.
I feel like I think two things can exist at the same time. You can have a deep devotion and appreciation of a work of art, but still acknowledge that it is not real in the confines of like the world we live in.
Yeah.
It's something that somebody has created for the purposes of entertainment.
There are so many points that I want to touch on right now at the same time, but what you just said, I think is the most relevant thing to talk about right now. Cause what you're going to realize is this whole conversation in terms of philosophy is a crossover between the philosophy of language and aesthetics. Because a lot of the time, in order to talk about these mediums of art, yeah, there are certain languages that you have to use. So yeah, there are two theorists that I want to bring to the forefront. One is Wittgenstein. He came up with this theory called that basically argues that there are language games.
Okay.
So you exist within different language games that I don't. So for example, you're Congolese and I'm Nigerian. So there are certain words that you will use, not necessarily from a different language, but there are certain terminologies that you will use that I will just never understand because I do not grow up Congolese. You can probably teach me and I'll be like, oh, okay, so that's what that means. But you are in that language game. So basically what I'm trying to say is there is, I guess, a language game for different shows, different mm-hmm. like mediums of art. For and sure. Something else that links to that is someone called Kendall Walton, who basically argued something called make-believe theory. Okay. And I think this is the most relevant. Kendall Walton argues that we are just playing make-believe. So when we discuss fiction in the context of the fictional world, then those are things that can be considered cognitive. So when something is cognitive, that means it has a true or false value. Within the world of fiction, Harry Potter being best friends with Draco Malfoy, for example, is simply false. But yes, external to that, that doesn't mean anything. In the real world, that does not mean anything. But it's interesting that we can enter into these fictional worlds and have conversations, like cognitive conversations, like this is true, this is false, and that's okay. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, what's confusing?
So he's saying that basically in these worlds, like there are truths in these worlds, but yeah, when you take it out of that world, doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, to a degree.
Okay.
To a degree, I don't know. Because I'm very much of the perspective that art is very meaningful.
Yeah.
But it's very much the meaning you ascribe it.
Mm.
And it's very much...
So how is it meaningful then? If the meaning is subjective. If the meaning is subjective. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting. For example, right? We see, or go to music, we see music being used as protest music.
Fairs.
We see music that kind of is the backdrop for very real political movements.
Yeah.
And the song at its creation might not have been intended for that, but it's been brought into an environment where the song has significance.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah, like for example, I don't know. I'll use Naruto again because it was on my mind. Naruto and Sasuke being friends has no relevance to my life, right?
Like nothing.
But at the same time, I can analyze their friendship,
yeah,
and look at, okay, what happens when two unhealed people become friends?
Mm.
And then it mostly, I feel like what the purpose of like fiction is mainly to ask, it poses questions that the audience should decipher for themselves.
Do you think all fiction has to be meaningful in that way though?
I think all fiction is, but you don't have to look at it that way.
Okay.
I don't think and bearing in mind, I don't think every writer has this grand idea of like,
this is going to represent that, this is the meaning of this. Yeah.
But sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's out of your control.
Mm.
Like sometimes it is like your fiction resonated with a group of people. Like your intention, right? Sometimes your intention doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Sometimes like if you decided, hey, if you made a black character, right? If a writer made a black character because, hey, they just wanted a character with an afro.
Mm.
But that character now becomes a big symbol for like underrepresented black kids.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Your intention of just making a cool character design is fair.
Yeah.
But what it means to these people is also real.
Yeah.
And it just is what it is. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's also like something like some writers may, like, in a negative aspect, some writers I've seen like cartoons, right, with characters, with like black characters with like the nasty like gollywog lips, and from an artist perspective, that could be just a character design. Like they didn't intend to be racist or whatever, but I look at that and I'm like, yo, I know that wasn't your intent, but the impact is the impact. And sometimes the intent and impact,
it doesn't matter what you intended. It's about how it affected people sometimes first. Cool. I'm going to talk about one more idea. This has gone by so quickly. Like, it's crazy the amount of things that we've touched on. And I feel like we haven't even said everything that there is to be said, which is so sad. But I have a theory, which links to what you were saying. So you know how you were like, like nothing is new under the sun?
Yeah.
I have a theory which basically agrees with that and is basically me arguing. Okay, let me just say the theory. Okay, so it's based on the law of conservation of energy, which is energy cannot be created or destroyed, only transferred. I think this is also the basis for my ontological argument for my belief in God. But side note, with that same concept, that basically means that ideas also cannot be created or destroyed, only transferred. So what I'm saying is everything that we see is real in some way, but it just shows up differently. It's come from somewhere. So when I say everything that is real, I mean like unicorns. I mean like, what do you call it? Nephilim giants? Nephilim. Do you know what I'm saying? Nephilim, but you know, basically giants, the concept of giants, the concept of even the concept of God that some people think is fictional, for me is like, where did you get these ideas from? You know, A Christmas Carol, the way Charles Dickens. I'm mixing up everyone's name. Charles Dickens. He talks so in so much depth about the ghosts that roamed the land, how they were dragging chains. I believe he saw something.
I believe, so for example, there's a lot of like, you know how there's like folklores and like tales that are passed down from generation to generation, right? There are things that are based on the reality that it get expanded. For example, beware of creatures of the night, right? That could have come from, hey, people in ancient civilization don't go at nighttime because there's wolves.
And there wasn't really much electricity at that time.
There wasn't wolves. Like, be careful at night. There are creatures of the night. Okay, and somebody has an ingenious idea to be like, okay, what if I make that creature humanoid? Okay, give them teeth and they bite people. Okay, because no, not even they bite people. Okay, cannibals are a real thing. Cannibals are a real thing. What's the difference between a cannibal and a vampire? One's immortal. Do you know what I'm saying? All it takes is one micro change, one domino, and it creates an entirely different thing. And that's what I mean about like,
that's why fiction is so cool. Like, how did you come up with that?
Because there's even ideas that I have fictionally that I'm like, oh, that's out there, but you can always, and sometimes even as the author, you might not, but a lot of people aren't going back throughout the history of their imagination. They probably saw something inspired and then they took it from there. But if you look at, I'll use music as a perfect example. Sampling.
I've taken
something that already exists. I've cut, chopped, changed it and turned it into something completely different. Like, this song was made in 1975 in a blues club, and I've put a techno beat over it, a technology that didn't exist back then, and I've made something that was physically impossible to make back then. I've made something new.
That's so good.
But it came from something else.
That is so good. That is so good. I really like that. I think there's one more thing that I want to bring up just very briefly before you leave final notes and shout yourself out, which is David Hume. He's a philosopher. He's a weird philosopher because he talks about everything. And he also spoke about this, and he discussed the power of fiction and how it has the power to generate emotional responses even though people know it's not real. And I think that's so interesting. I think it also appeals to psychology a little bit, but also about just human nature and what we're interested in. because we know that this is not real, but yet it has such a profound impact on us.
Yeah.
And then we relate it to such sometimes political and sociological issues. Absolutely. As well. So I don't want us to go into this necessarily, but an example would be the concept of the mermaid from, is it Ariel? Or Little Mermaid?
Ariel's The Little Mermaid, yeah.
Is it? They're not two different shows?
No.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I thought they were two different shows.
Nah.
Oh my goodness, no. Oh my gosh. Okay, that's fine. The fact that Ariel is black has become, and it's just like, guys, you know, this is fiction. Why are we turning? Like, it's so, the profound impact that it has on real life is just so crazy to me. The people go as far as to say, what if we turned, what's her name from Princess and Tiana from Princess and the Frog, what if she was white, etc., etc.? And it's just like, this is it's such an interesting conversation.
It's fictional, but then it's so funny because, like, what if you turn Tiana white? Cool. But there's, in that movie, there's so many historical and contextual signifiers that she has to be black.
Yeah. Like, she's in, that cannot be a
she's
white.
A, she's from Louisiana. She was from a specific part of Louisiana.
Yeah.
Louisiana that's black. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. And this, it's the way these literatures are constructed in a way. Like, they're constructed with very, like, you can't, for example, to use the white character, you can't make Captain America Steve Rogers white. Why? He fought in Nazis. He was a he was like a propaganda piece in World War II. Mm. Americans aren't putting black people as a symbol of America in the 1950s. Do you know what I'm saying? But it's, even though it's fake, you're still using critical thinking to break down and decipher these characters.
It's so interesting because how make believe can you go then? You can't, like, it's the boundaries, the constraints, the rules that no one actually talks about that you mentioned. It's weird
because in the same context I'm mentioning you can't do this because of the region.
Yeah.
Is the same movie where we Prince and the Frog, we have a voodoo priest.
Like, excuse me, you know she turned into a frog. What are we talking about here?
But I think that's the beauty of art because you can engage with it.
Because so many different ways.
You can engage with it from an escapist point of view where I just want to escape into a world of fantasy.
Mm.
But the reason that anchors us into these movies is because there's a level of reality that we all resonate with. Otherwise, we'd be watching just random colors on a screen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's even a question in of itself. Why is this something that we can get substance from? Yeah. Why is it not just like colors on a screen?
Yeah.
But I'm aware that we need to wrap this up.
No worries.
So I'm gonna allow you to just, you know, make your closing remarks. If you want to leave off with anything, shout yourself out, let the people know where they can find you.
Appreciate it. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here.
So glad that you came.
I love yapping, so
real.
So but yeah, you can find me on the Rare Podcast. That is Rare Podcast. We just talk about anything, like if there's a topic 1 week that doesn't resonate with you, next week there'll probably be one, because our latest episode was about video games and we just went on and on about video games. But this is a much needed conversation, and art is important, and I think all of you, everyone is an artist, you just don't know what your medium is.
I liked that. I don't think there's anything I need to add. Guys, make sure you check out his stuff. He's really cool, okay? Yeah? Now I'm going to wrap it up and just say bye, guys.